Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and it's a pleasure to bring you part two of a three-part program on the life and times of 72-year-old Jack Levi. In the last program, we learned that Jack was born in 1950 and whose parents immigrated to Australia from Egypt in the late 1940s. A very studious boy, Jack studied hard and graduated from Melbourne University as a computer programmer. He commenced working in that field during the 1970s before discovering a love for comedy and a comedic persona that would take him on a wonderful journey through the world of comedy, a journey that continues right through until today. Jack reveals who his alter ego is, and it's that of the deadpan and very popular Elliot Goblet. Jack talks about his initial success on the first Daryl Summers show and subsequently Hey Hey, It's Saturday. He gets great pleasure from his work as a comedian, and he talks extensively about his experiences in both Australia and overseas, and we share some clips of his performances as Elliot Goblet. Jack also reveals that while there is great pleasure and reward in what he does, there's also great difficulties at times, and he also shares those stories and his experiences quite freely. What comes through clearly is Jack's vibrance, his love for life, and his continuous working career that goes right through to today. And this exemplifies him as a high-profile person promoting positive aging. We pick up now with Jack introducing us to his alter ego, Elliot Goblet. Okay, before we get to Daryl, because that's in many people's minds and memories would be a wonderful period for television and wonderful experiences both as an audience and probably for you. Let's take a little step back because we haven't actually identified. Many people know your alter ego, but not many people know Jack. So we're talking about Elliot, aren't we?
Yeah, we're talking about Elliot Goblet, yeah.
How did the name come about?
Well, that's very simple. Elliot is my middle name, and Goblet I just dreamt up. I did a bit of brainstorming with myself and wanted a name that was different and a bit weird, but not too crazy. You know?
So did Elliot come into being at that very beginning, at those early days, or did he, as a name, come a little bit later on? Were you Jack to start with, or was it Elliot right from day one?
It was Elliot from day one, although the character wasn't really established properly, but it was Elliot Goblet. I just felt I needed an alternative name, that's all.
Yes.
For my comedy.
So history shows that first program on Daryl's Hey Hey It's Saturday was fantastically successful.
No, it wasn't Daryl's Hey Hey. It was Daryl's the Daryl Summers Show.
Daryl Summers Show.
Ran from 82 and 83. So that went very well, and they wanted me back as quickly as possible, and that continued. So I did 8 shows in a year and a half. So mid-82 to the end of 83, which is when – so I did 8 shows in a year and a half, and the show – that show ended at the end of 83, and then Daryl Summers moved on to Hey Hey, It's Saturday Evenings. So morning it went to evening at the start of 84, and I stayed with Hey Hey right up until the end in 1999. Yeah.
That's right, because it used to be a Saturday morning show.
Yeah, it was a Saturday morning show, early 70s.
Religious watching.
Yeah. So when Hey Hey moved to evenings, it was a real success. In fact, towards the late 80s, early 90s, it was rating phenomenally. Yeah.
Elliot Goblet was first on Hey Hey It's Saturday back in 1984. And prior to that, he was on there was the Daryl Summers Tonight Show back in 1982. This is his 16th performance on Hey Hey. This is his 50th appearance on television doing stand-up. Let's, as they say, give it up or give a little bit of sugar for Elliot Goblet!
Thanks. And for the 50th time, it's great to be inside your television. For those of you who don't know me, I am Elliot Goblet, stand-up comedian, corporate humorist, compere, and also the fourth but silent tenor. I'd like to change the pace a bit now. I like to take black and white photographs of the rainbow and then have them coloured in with the colours that I prefer. I like to flirt with danger and use my shampoo after my conditioner. I'm really paranoid that people will steal my jokes, so I never do my best stuff in front of audiences. Last month at my place, I had a games night, and in one particular game, I had to go outside of the room, and each of my guests in turn broke a piece of my furniture. And after everyone had finished, I had to come back inside the room and guess who broke what. And because I guessed at least one correct, I won the right to have the games night at my place again this month. I'm waiting on elective surgery with a bit of a difference. Just for the hell of it, I'm going to have my kidneys rotated. I'm going to have my kneecaps turned around 180 degrees, so instead of kneeling down, I'll be kneeling up. And I'm going to have my eyes raised, so I've no longer got a receding hairline. So...
You look back at that period now, what was it about it that gave you most pleasure in your performance?
Oh.
Or performances?
Well, just getting the laughter, becoming famous. I really got off on that. That was great. Being recognised everywhere I went. Contributing to the comedy content of the country and donating something different, you know, giving something different that was nowhere else, you know. The fact that I was original was gratifying for me, and it made me memorable for people. They'd only see me once and they'd remember Elliot Goblet, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was great that I was a contributor in such a way, and I was able to influence other comedians as well and be in a position where I could even semi-mentor them, you know, give them advice on their acts, because I had the authority to do that, being on television as often as I was. I had that authority in it, and I like helping people,
mm-hmm.
So that made it easy for me to do that. And I was able to help. I mean, I've done so many work for different causes and charities. I was in a position to do that, whether it was MS or Starlight Foundation. In the last couple of decades, has been the Les Twentyman Foundation. So being in a position where you can perform for free mainly and draw a crowd on your name, which then means money in the coffers for these organisations. So I had some power and I handled it pretty well.
As a viewer, it all flowed fairly well. I mean, even the chaos seemed at times to be a little bit organised, but it probably wasn't. But I think that's just maybe just a reflection of the people working behind the scenes. But looking at what we don't see when we watch television... What was your impressions?
What we don't see?
Yeah, what the viewers didn't see.
Oh, look, with Hey Hey, particularly when it was live, you basically got what was going on. You got it. If it was pre-recording, sometimes there might be a muffle and, you know, we need to do a take two or something, you know. But that was pretty infrequent on Hey Hey. More frequent in other shows that I'd been in the audience at, you know, where they're pre-recording and there's a lot of stop-starting, which is quite aggravating, but they've had to do that. They say game shows, for example, or I think the comedy company had to restart a couple of times on a sketch that started off a bit wrong, you know, so things like that. But, yeah, there's a bit of the behind the scenes. But, you know, I mean, the real revelation to me of being in an audience was back in 1986 when I went to the Johnny Carson show, the Tonight Show in America, and Paul Hogan actually was on, coincidentally, and I was in the audience, and during the commercial breaks you could see the lack of interaction, lack of engagement between Johnny Carson and his sidekick Ed. I can't remember his surname now, but there wasn't really that engagement or warm interaction,
really?
And I knew that they didn't particularly get on, but you could see it obviously being in the audience, because when they came back from the break, it was all smiles, yes. And we're best the best buddies. Mates, yeah.
Yes.
So, yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Was there much camaraderie like that in your Australian experiences on television between crews and cast?
Yes, yeah. The crew at Hey Hey were very close generally. And the midday show, where I did 11 midday shows, they were very close. A lot of you have to be cooperative and engaging and know exactly what your task is and fit in if you want to remain in a team on television, putting on a live show.
Yes.
Listen to older voices. Living history on Ageless Radio.
I'm Rob Grizz and I'm talking with Jack Levi, and Jack is talking about his experiences working in television. Are there any performances that you can look back on now, just recall now, that really stand out?
A number of them. I mean, I was at the My Music Bowl and part of a big show to raise money when we had the tragedy in Ethiopia. Then we did a big show. There was four comedy acts on and a number of musical acts, so that was great to be part of that. A tour with the band America, one of their Australian tours, was in 2004, and did eight shows with them on the eastern seaboard of Australia. So I did my 20-minute spot. There was a little break, and then they came on, and that was a delightful time. Mm. You know, doing venues like the Opera House in Sydney twice and Hamer Hall here and the Brisbane Entertainment Centre and the Hobart Entertainment Centre and the Wollongong Entertainment Centre. And, you know, it was a great eight-leg tour. Working for Amway was great because you'd get a standing ovation before you started. You know, that was novel.
Oh.
A very hyper crowd. And we're talking about big crowds too. They call them family reunions, where you've got somebody called a diamond who's got a lot of people under them, and they have thousands of people gathered together for an event, and quite often they'd use me as the comedian.
Is this in Australia or
in Australia? Yeah.
Oh, I'm showing my ignorance here because I didn't even understand that was happening here.
Oh, Vodafone Arena here and other big Burswood Entertainment Centre in WA. I did about seven for them because I was one of the few comedians they could use, because not only am I a clean comedian, but my content is not smutty. You know, I don't talk about drugs or wiping your backside. So that's why they used me and very few others.
Family safe.
Yeah. And also I write material for every event. So they liked that. I was able to write some issues that related to the frustrations of people in Amway, you know, and some of the with some of the products and whatever. I could bring all that stuff up, yeah.
Where does it come from, do you think? The fact that you are able to create material like that so often and for such a varied circumstances?
Look, I think because of my education and my work experience, where I had to do research in my day job. So that, I guess, was the led me on to maybe do the depths of research that other people don't do because they didn't work in the real world for as long as I did, or didn't work in the real world at all. So I had a real embrace with research, and it was just logical to do research if you're doing a private or corporate function.
Right. Mm. Have you worked exclusively in Australia or have you worked overseas?
I've worked overseas. I've worked in seven other countries.
Oh, goodness.
I guess some of the highlights are an eight-week US tour in 1989 with a few other comedians that were invited to go as well. The Montreal Festival in that same year. A number of corporate gigs in New Zealand. UK, I was there in the England for 4.5 days because they filmed me for two episodes that went to air on UK TV, but also got sold to New Zealand and Australian television. So that was a buzz. Rick Wakeman was the MC there.
Oh, right.
And other odd jobs like in Fiji, Papua New Guinea and Thailand, where they were corporate jobs, but to either Australian audiences or Australian/New Zealand audiences.
For example,
in Thailand, it was for Wella Haircare. I was invited over as the comedy act, and they had a guy called Barry Bull as the motivational speaker, and it was for top salon owners and managers in Australia. That was their treat, and they brought Australian performers over to surprise them. So that was a buzz, being, I guess, when they thought hair care, well, I thought Elliot Goblet.
Because I was going to have to say to you, how in heaven's name would people in Thailand relate to Elliot Goblet? But they didn't have to.
Didn't have to.
I like to go up to tourists and ask them to take photos of each other with my camera. In a park, if I see a photographer taking wedding photos, I like to take all my clothes off and creep into the background of the photos and pretend I'm a naked statue. I like to go up to bald-headed guys and give them empty bottles of shampoo. I like to flirt with danger and use my shampoo after my conditioner. Pretty crazy, eh?
I like to go into a lift where there's only one other person, stand right up close to them face to face and say, pretend you know me, just to impress the others.
I often go diving in the Great Barrier Reef because I like to stare at tourists through glass-bottom boats. I like to have a big party at a mystery address, invite people I don't know and then not even turn up myself.
And whenever I'm standing in the queue, I'm really paranoid that somebody's going to push in, so I'll always stand hard up against the person in front of me. And it doesn't take long before people let me just pass through to the front counter.
You've done some fairly extensive travelling. Does that lead you to being able to identify that you have a favourite place or a favourite country, or is that an unfair question?
My favourite countries are ones that I visited when I did a trip to Europe in the 70s. Out of the ones that I've worked in, certainly Fiji was great. I was there a couple of times and enjoyed that very much. As a destination to perform at,
Again, for Australian audiences in Fiji.
No, it was actually in New Zealand. One was an Australian, well, a mix, and the second one was a New Zealand audience. I remember it really well because it was in 2006, and it was Tower Life was the client, Tower Life, and I was to MC the Saturday morning. And I remember the guy who introduced me, he came up, he said, we've got a real surprise for you people, an MC that you should enjoy. And he said, oh, before we bring him on, a bit of sad news, we just lost Peter Brock. I thought, oh.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So that's great. So I get introduced and they're really in sad mode.
Yeah,
so I had to take them for not just a cold motor, but an ultra cold motor.
Yeah.
So that's always a challenge when there's a bit of sad news or a sad video shown before you come on, because people are quite often weeping there, rubbing their eyes or clearing tears from their eyes, and then you come on. Obviously can't get laughs from the start, but you just got to breeze into it. Yeah.
Some of that psychology that you once studied might have come in a bit handy there. Understanding the psychology of people and how to gently bring them from one state to another.
Yeah, well put.
You did mention when I asked you that question, or you seemed to indicate that it could have been answered one or two ways, your experiences in terms of a favourite or wonderful country with your work, but you also indicated you did just some travel and that might have been different. So in terms of travel, what personal travel have you done overseas?
Well, I did a lot and it was a long time ago. It was in 1977, but, all over the place. I mean, Norway and Switzerland for their scenery, Greece and a Greek island called Paros for just a really relaxed stay, quality of life. In fact, I stayed on a rooftop on the Greek island of Paros for five days. That was the only accommodation I could get on somebody's rooftop, and it was August, so I knew there was no rain.
Hmm.
Beautiful balmy nights. I think I paid all of 50 cents for a night.
For the roof.
Yeah. Hungary was good. I was travelling with a lady who had relatives in Hungary, and that was great contrast.
not a country most many people talk about in terms of travel.
No, because she knew people there and we had places to stay. It was a great place, very inexpensive to live in Hungary, and I loved. And I thought it was quite charming, Budapest, and also went to a place called Lake Balaton. That was a great little resort in Hungary. So there was a contrast. So really, there's some nice contrasts. And of course, I went to England. Had a fair bit of time there. Hired a car and drove around. That was great. The contrast within England.
Any parts of England really grabbed you more than others?
I really like Bath. You know, the old city of Bath.
The Roman city. Yes.
Yeah. That stood out. Stonehenge was a buzz to see Stonehenge. But just touring around the Cotswolds, very pretty. It was just a delight to drive around there.
Did you do most of that on your own, or did you?
No, I actually had my partner with me that I was travelling with. Yeah. She knew some people in Kent, Dartford in Kent, which I think is where Mick Jagger grew up in Kent, and we were able to stay there. It was a nice little contrast.
Fantastic.
And ended up going to a soccer match. With somebody else that was staying there, so that was some good experiences. Of course, the galleries and the art around in Italy, brilliant art in Florence. I enjoyed that very much, and just a buzz of seeing old things, you know, the Acropolis in Greece or the Colosseum in Rome, you know, places like that, and real history in Israel. I went to Israel at the tail end of my European journey, and there was some real contrast in Israel too.
Oh, I bet there were.
Oh, brilliant.
What about Egypt? Did you go?
I never went to Egypt.
Look back to your families.
No. Everybody fled from Egypt because it was pretty tough for Jewish people.
Oh, of course.
Most of my family on my mother's side went to Israel, but on my father's side, some went to Israel, others went to the US. Or the UK or France.
That's pretty diverse. It's almost across the planet.
Yes.
Listen to older voices. The magic of memories.
Has there ever been any attempt for the family like that to keep in any contact, or is that geographically just broken the family up a bit?
Oh, look, I was able to make contact with them when I travelled, you know, whether it was Europe or the US. You know, I'd made contact.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's an interesting story. I had four cousins in New York, and one of them, Harry, who sadly has passed away, he let me know that he was coming to a wedding in Australia in 2014. He said he let me know via email, I'm coming to a wedding in Australia in 2014. And I got back to him and said, well, Australia's a pretty big place. It's pretty unlikely we'll catch up. But then he told me where and when, and I said, that's amazing. The Gold Coast, on the Gold Coast, or a little bit out of the main area of the Gold Coast, he was going to a wedding on a Saturday night at the home, and he was staying a few extra days. Well, I did a 40th birthday party on the Gold Coast on that Saturday night, and I had a bit of space. I wasn't flying out until later on that Sunday, and I was able to have this long lunch with him and the people he was staying with.
And you're trying to convince him this is a big country and we'll never meet up.
That was freaky.
Oh, yeah, that is. Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely freaky. And, of course, the people he was staying with knew me, and they were overjoyed to have me there. It was just one of the best lunches.
Ah, fantastic. Mm, yeah. Yeah, well, don't try and convince him again. You'll never meet up.
Well, he, like I said, he's passed away.
Oh, he has. That's right, yes.
Unfortunately, COVID got him. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that brings us towards more up-to-date events. There's a few things I'd like to check out with you there. But first of all, are you still working?
Yes, I am, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Had a very lean period during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
The odd virtual job, you know, I think I did 7 in total. But now I'm back into it, mainly corporate, also wedding MC work, also birthday parties, and the odd sporting event, and public gigs, but I'm selective about them. I've got two or three coming up this year, but two of them are really big, one in Melbourne, one in Sydney.
Before we started the interview, yep. You and I were talking about the fact that we're both in our 70s now.
Yep.
And I remarked when I looked at you, you are an incredibly vital person to look at, and I mean, you emanate energy. And obviously having a workload like that seems to reflect the fact that life is anything but over for you.
Absolutely. I feel sad for people that I call RFDs, you know, ready for death, RFD. And, you know, I know a number of them, and you know, they haven't got a purpose or a passion in life, and it really takes years off their life, I think, or will take years off their life. I take care of myself. Yeah, I can't see an end to it, really. I just keep working. I love what I do, and it's wonderful.
I went to a restaurant. There was a sign that said, "We take all cards." So I gave them a sympathy card with the words, "Sorry, I left my wallet at home." I have a total of 3.5 alcohol-free days a week. I don't drink every day of the week for the first half of the day.
Do join Jack and I next week when we present the third and final program, which features the story of both Jack Levi and his persona of Elliot Goblet, and how his work as Elliot helps raise money for charitable foundations like the Les Twentyman Foundation and Father Bob. But wait, there's much more. But you'll have to find out next week with Jack Levi on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.